trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the show. Here we are, brand new year. Lots of possibilities. Many good ones. A few not so good ones, but we are all in this together. I'm sorry. It sounds just as phony and hollow when I say it as when some government paid, you know, spinmeister is putting that out there. Nonetheless, I'm glad you are joining us today. This is a place where wrong thinkers can find refuge, courage, and camaraderie, a chance to own your own worldview and to think more clearly and independently about the world around us. I have great sponsors who make this program possible. A quick mention of each of them: MonticelloCollege.org, LifesavingFood.com, the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George, Utah, HSLAmmo.com, SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, and last but not least, GovernYourIncome.com. All right, let's start with something fun. I woke up this morning feeling I had a little frog in my throat, a little stuffy nose, and of course, you know, like most people, I had to stop and ponder, oh boy, is this it? Could it be that I have the Omicron, you know, version or variant of COVID? Sorry, but, you know, anybody coughs or sneezes, right? We all kind of, oh man, there it is, you know, the plague, it's here. So I decided to check and see if there were any symptoms that I could Google and just see if, in fact, you know, whatever I was feeling was matching up. And this is courtesy of, what is his name? J.D., the long-haired, red-headed dude, the funny guy. Anyway, Awaken with JP. This is from his account. Other symptoms of Omicron. And I read this and I thought, man, I'm in trouble. If you have any of these symptoms, chances are you've got the virus or will get it very soon. Symptoms include mild hunger between meals, feeling cold outside in the winter when not wearing a coat, tiredness at night. Ooh, I get that one a lot. Thirst after a long period of not drinking. Heartburn after 3-alarm chili. Difficulty looking directly at the sun. Sweating while exercising. See, that's why I don't exercise. I don't want to know. Dizziness while hanging upside down. Or if you have an inability to see in the dark. Last but not least, if water feels wet on your skin. Any of these symptoms might be an indicator that you have the Omicron virus. All right, now it may sound like, Brian, are you making light of something that's very serious and that requires us to do extraordinary things that we normally wouldn't do? Well, I am kind of making fun of it, but I'm making fun of it because of all the different variants and of all the scary things that have happened over the last couple of years, I don't think anything has been as overblown as the fear peddling and the fear porn attached to this Omicron variant. I mean, people have lost their minds. In fact, there's a term we're going to be talking about today, mass formation psychosis. In fact, we're going to spend a fair amount of time talking about Dr. Robert Malone in the second hour of the show. I don't know if you've heard of his recent interview with Joe Rogan. I mean, considering Rogan, when he interviews guests, these are in-depth interviews, 3 hours long. And a lot of people are, hey, I don't have that kind of time. I'm a busy person. But if you want to have a good information bank from which to draw, this is something you're going to have to get used to, is sometimes it's worth paying the price to sit down and listen to the whole 3 hours. I mean, come on, if you have to drive somewhere, you can listen to the podcast, you know, instead of watching. I mean, it's just, how important is it to you to be informed? I mean, would you rather somebody just kind of spoon feed you the pre-digested, pre-chewed talking, you know, points and sound bites that, okay, this is what I'm supposed to believe? Man, I sure don't resonate with that, and I'm hoping you don't either. But the bottom line is Joe Rogan, and in this case, Dr. Robert Malone, I think they've actually broken Google's algorithm, and especially Twitter. Twitter's one of the big trending terms right now is mass psychosis or mass formation psychosis, something Dr. Malone talks about. We'll get to that. Okay, I don't want to start out because this it may raise your blood pressure when you realize how intensely and how openly we are being lied to and manipulated in order to force our compliance or to force us to acquiesce to the demands of people who want us to do whatever. So let's start with something a little more positive, okay? We have a new year in front of us. And I'm going to start with something here from Paul Rosenberg. And it's a meditation for 2022. This is kind of a deep thought, but here's a question for you. What are you doing today that will benefit people 1,000 years from now? I know it's pretty lofty, right? But it's an invitation to appreciate the people who came before us, as well as a chance to consider what we might do for the people who will follow in our footsteps. Paul Rosenberg says, if you could go back in time 1,000 years, you'd find people who were shockingly similar to those you presently love. The same is true for people who will live 1,000 years from now. Some of them will be nearly identical to the people you now love, and you would care as deeply for them as you do for their present-day counterparts. Now he says, please understand this. The men, women, and children we would love in the future can advance only in the same way we have, which is by the benefaction of their predecessors. Can you imagine how long it took for ignorant men to learn the rules of metallurgy, or crop rotation, or 100 other things we can barely imagine being without? His point is, our lives are advanced only because they created new ways of living and passed them down to us. Hundreds of generations lived through dark times, fighting toward whatever bits of light they could find, opposed by others nearly the entire way, in order to bring us to where we are now. And whether you like to think about this or not, someday our generation will also be gone, and we will have played, whether or not we've understood it, the crucial role of transmitting civilization to the following generations. So what do we want them to be like? How would we want them to live? Numberless men and women struggled into the future and spent all they had in order to bring us here. And Paul Rosenberg says we owe them something. Now, it may be that they no longer care, but their gifts to us will cease to exist unless we pass them along. Only we can make them matter. And he says they deserve to matter. So we now stand at the threshold of the stars, but we've been held back by structures designed to control us and to reap from us. And we must get past those structures in order to continue forward. Now, foolishness and fear bid us to forget the future. In other words, chase status instead of goodness, consumption rather than production, and comfort rather than expansion. 1,000 self-serving voices call us aside, grasping at our emotions. And Paul Rosenberg says we must turn away from all of it. We owe this to the people of the past. We owe it to the people of the future. We owe it to ourselves. But here's the key. What happens next is up to you. It's not up to leaders. It's up to you. The consequences of your failures are inescapable. The consequences of your successes, likewise, are inescapable. And whether or not you acknowledge them, our descendants will live or die by them. So what you are and what you do matter a very great deal. And he finishes with this call to engage your will, act, and awake. I like that last part especially. And that's really, that is what this show is about. This program is not about building the largest, most amazing audience in the history of humankind. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd be happy if that is what happened. But I'm not counting on it. I think I have a duty to try to speak the truth as best I know how, to bring you the truth that others are trying to get out there in the face of forces that are working very hard to keep them quiet, or at least keep them in the shadows where not very many people can examine them. Got my first taste of that last week when YouTube was like, Mr. Hyde, you are guilty of medical misinformation peddling, and you know, gave me a warning about something in one of my episodes. I don't know specifically what it was, because frankly, I thought I'd been doing my job well, and most of what I'm saying is challenging those artificial limits on what you're allowed to believe and what you aren't. But I think there's never been a time where it's more essential, more critical, that we be awake. That doesn't mean afraid, and it doesn't mean angry, but simply aware. I know a lot of people kind of get a little bit of a rush out of putting their their pronouns. My personal pronouns are here in my bio, as you can see. And I think the best personal pronouns that I've seen within recent memory, somebody had put, you know, instead of him, he, you know, as there's pronouns, it was awake and concerned. I thought, yep, that's pretty much where I am too. See, once you're aware, once you're awake, it's pretty hard to go back to sleep. And for some people, that's a pretty uncomfortable thought. I get that. I've been there myself. Wishing I could close my eyes, wishing I could go back to the comfort and ignorance, the bliss of ignorance. That's not what the world needs right now. What the world needs is for you and me to have our eyes open, our spines steely, and the courage to keep moving forward toward truth, regardless of the forces around us. So we'll do that right after the break.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
All right, welcome back to the show. Hey, just a quick aside here. If you would like to receive my show notes in your email inbox, all you have to do is go to my website, thebrianhydeshow.com, and click the subscribe button. It'll ask you for your email. I do not sell your email to any third parties or anything like that. All I will do is when I publish my show notes, which I do each day that I do this program, it will automatically send a copy to your inbox. That way, if you're not really into, you know, listening to me doing what I do, you can at least follow the links yourself and weigh it out for yourself. At no point am I insisting that you're going to have to believe this because I posted it. Nope. It's your mind. You get to make up, you know, what you accept and what you don't. See, that's the difference between me and, I guess, the people who would like to censor and otherwise shape what information you're allowed to see and hear. I trust that you're smart enough. You can make your own choices. And hey, maybe your choice is, you know what, Brian, I'm just not feeling the love here. So goodbye. That's fine. I'm speaking for those people who are looking for truth. In fact, for whom truth is more important than comfort, that personal comfort and that sense of, everything's great. Things aren't that bad. So with that in mind, let's move on ahead. A lot of folks are breathing a sigh of relief right now, saying, oh, we've got a new year ahead of us. And, you know, it's understandable. A lot of folks are engaging in a bit of self-examination, working on improving themselves. I'm among them. I've been giving very serious thought to what might I do better or do with more purpose in this coming year. Well, here's a novel suggestion by Rustic Mama from the Organic Prepper site. And that is, 2022 is a fine year to work on standing up to bullies. And one of the bullies you're going to have to stand up to is the one that lives inside your own head. Listen to what Rustic Mama says. She says, you know what I hate? I hate bullies. Really, there are several other things I hate as well. Injustice, living in a mess, although I love getting my hands dirty, rudeness, unnecessary and uncalled for criticism, selfishness, cantaloupe. Yes, cantaloupe, I loathe it. I'd rather starve than eat it. But she says, mostly, I hate bullies. I hate watching a fellow human being who's been made in the image of God and who deserves to live in freedom and dignity, being beaten down to the point where they've lost all hope and sense of self-worth. Now she says, I've been there and done that. And after 22 plus years, I left his sorry butt and slowly, gradually, painfully, and with the help of a few good people, fought my way back to live a life of strength and deep personal conviction that I do deserve every single positive thing in my life. But she says, I've been seeing a lot of bullying these days. Lots of it. And it's not just the type of bullying from one person against another, one political movement to another, or one social group against another. Although a lot is that. She says, what I'm seeing is bullying that we are inflicting on ourselves inside our own head. And she says, and I hate bullies. So this is what self-bullying sounds like. My life will never get back to normal. Why should it? I don't deserve it. This sucks. How about this one? I'll never feel loved again after losing, insert the name of friend or loved one, lost in the last 2 years. Now she says, we've all lost someone we love and we don't sometimes allow ourselves to move through the natural stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance into a life of hope. Happy New Year! What's there to be happy about? I've lost my job. My family won't speak to me because they or I have not taken certain medical procedures. I have no money left. Crap will hit the fan and I'll die because I won't be ready. The world's chaotic. I hate, insert the name, a public figure. I'm afraid all the time. What's there to be happy about? And this last one's probably the most common one that I think I hear in my head. I'm so exhausted. I can't take this anymore. Well, Rustic Mama says, well, you consider your own internal bully dialogue. She goes, I'm going to put a kettle on so we can have a chat. I'll give you a minute. She says, a few years ago, I had the supreme pleasure of traveling to Croatia with a bunch of strangers who are now among my closest friends to learn survival lessons from Toby and Selko, two men who have lived through extremely tough times. Now, every lesson was valuable, she says, but one of the most life-changing for me was the lesson of dealing with what goes on inside my head. Propaganda, Selko said, there will be lots of propaganda. You won't always know what is truth. Well, believe it or not, propaganda exists inside our heads as well. Happy New Year is, in my humble opinion, one of those sources of such propaganda. She says, riddle me this. What makes January 1st any different from March 2nd or June 20th? Why do we make promises to ourselves and sometimes to others that we often forget a week later? Why do we put so many expectations on ourselves for things to be different next year? Won't we still be surviving the same challenges, the same difficulties, in the same body, with the same mindset? If we choose to, yes. But what if we chose something different? Not because it's a happy new year, but because we decided to stand up to our own bully. So here are some strategies that may help you survive your own bully, regardless of what the next 365 days bring. These are really great suggestions, by the way. Number one, do not isolate yourself. Now, she says, I don't give a flying flip what your local restrictions are, because with the use of that device you're probably reading these words on, you can reach out in numerous ways to your fellow human beings. Focus on FaceTiming or phone calls like in the good old days when we could hear each other's voices and see each other's faces instead of letters and emojis on a screen. Call, FaceTime, spend time chatting about your lives. And of course, there's always the option to practice a bit of civil disobedience and visit with people anyway. Secondly, she suggests shut off or severely limit your social media accounts in favor of real-life relationships. Now, modern technology is a wonderful thing, but it doesn't and shouldn't replace real-life relationships. For instance, she says, at the start of this thing going on, my dearest and closest friend of 20 years was dying of brain cancer. For my own mental well-being and in order to be fully available for her, I all but shut down my social media accounts and blocked anyone I hadn't spoken to or seen for a while, or I didn't know in real life. Now that simple step, she says, took a huge load off me both mentally and emotionally, while providing some level of help in the midst of enormous grief. Real relationships are based on truth, not a keyboard. And of course they are possible via technology. In fact, she says, I met my current husband 2 decades ago while we lived 9,500 miles apart, and we've remained happily married to this day, but in balance. Find your balance. Next, she suggests, find and keep your own moral compass. Be authentic. Stay humble. She says, when I looked into Selko's eyes in Croatia, I saw peace where I thought I should see anger and the circumstances he endured. I saw calm where I expected to see chaos. I saw humility and a gentle willingness to teach and be open about his circumstances when it would not have surprised me to see arrogance and pride. Who we are, how we live, the choices we make all come from the core of our being. And many of us have no clue who that is. We live from one media crisis or family drama to the next like little paper boats being tossed about in the ocean and then wonder why our minds are in such anguish. Well, she says, believe me, the tougher our world becomes to deal with supply shortages and financial pressures, health issues, higher crime, etc., the more critical it will be for each of us to stay committed to the values to which we are already committed. If you don't have values, then God help us all, because our society needs people of moral conviction. In fact, she says, can I suggest reading Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl? She also recommends surround yourself with people of character like yourself, even if that means keeping others at a distance. Stay healthy, physically, mentally, and spiritually, in whatever way that is for you. Now, in this case, she says, I'm a person of faith. I believe we all are in some way or another, but that can be difficult in these rapidly evolving times to stay focused on healthy habits and positive vibes. She says, I escaped my bully one morning in 2000, but it took years to evict him from inside my head. It's a lifelong process. She also says, keep it simple. Spend time outdoors regularly. I think these are all pretty good suggestions. Now, here's the good news. I have a link to this article in the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. Click on that. Enjoy yet another resource for my fellow wrong thinkers. And stay close. We'll be back just the other side of these messages.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
All right, welcome back to the show. Just sending a quick message out there on behalf of lifesavingfood.com. This is one of my great sponsors. Yes, they sell food storage and other emergency preparedness things that you might find handy, you know, just on the off chance that somehow, some way, our world were ever to become slightly unstable. And you can get a nice little discount, 15% off with no sales tax and free delivery. Just click on the link that I provide in the show notes. Again, it's lifesavingfood.com. So like me, I bet you're probably relieved to think that, hey, we've got this whole new year ahead of us and we're breathing a sigh of relief. Oh, thank goodness 2021 was over. I'm not obsessed with celebrity deaths, but I will admit, when Betty White passed away on New Year's Eve, I was like, oh, man, that's such a bummer. She was, I think, 17 days away from her 100th birthday. And then she was gone. And I heard a couple of people say, well, if you wanted to be the most toasted individual of history, that's the way to do it. Live to almost 100 and then die on New Year's Eve, you know, because everybody's going to raise their glass in your memory that night. I don't think she was doing it out of selfishness or anything, but yeah, that's quite a milestone. Now, 2021's gone, but before we let the year that was, get too far downstream, Clarice Feldman reminds us there are still a few loose ends that we ought to tie up first. She says, what an awful year this was. I sincerely hope that the coming year is better. So here are a few loose ends that need clearing up as that dreadful year drops off into memory. The first is to hold public health authorities responsible for the mess they made. Professor Glenn Reynolds, she says, has my vote for holding them accountable. They lied to us, manipulated us for political purposes, and completely betrayed our trust. He summarizes their acts, and there's a nice link to that, and argues it's time for a rigorous investigation, perhaps a Truth and Reconciliation Commission with subpoena power, to get to the bottom of how our public health authorities have mismanaged this pandemic. There's certainly no chance that the existing establishment will do so. Now, Cheryl Atkinson offers a more complete 57-count indictment of our public health officials' conduct, concluding that they depended completely on vaccination, which has proven a total failure as a record number of people were vaccinated, a record number of people have gotten COVID. In fact, she shares Cheryl Atkinson's list in its entirety, just to remind you of how substantially they abused our trust. I'll work through a few of these. I'm going to leave some, though, for you to discover for yourself. Number one on that list, funded dangerous gain-of-function research with our adversary China using U.S. taxpayer money in order to create vaccines and other medicine. Number two, denied such funding had occurred. Number three, claimed the lab theory was debunked when it hadn't even been investigated. Number four, allowed China not to cooperate with the pandemic investigation. Never imposed serious sanctions or repercussions for non-cooperation. Number five, failed to disclose their own role in the gain-of-function research while publicly debunking U.S. involvement in it. Number six, claimed to have public officials make statements and publish papers claiming the lab theory had been debunked when it hadn't been. Number seven, encouraged the censorship of factual information on the news and the internet. We're going to be spending a lot of time talking about that next hour. Number 8, claimed it would take years for the first COVID-19 vaccine to be released. Number 9, conspired to controversialize scientists, researchers, and journalists who tell the truth about various aspects of COVID and the vaccines. Now, from here, I'm going to stop listing the numbers because it comes pretty rapid fire, but these are the same public health officials who falsely claimed certain gatherings, such as the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, were super spreader events when they were not. They distorted and exaggerated statistics to make it appear as though people were infected at events when they were not. They sent COVID-infected elderly from hospitals to nursing homes where they mass-infected other vulnerable residents. They told us masks don't work. They told us masks do work. They required wearing of masks. They recommended wearing of more than one mask. They failed to wear masks themselves when required. They said kids don't need masks. They said kids must mask. They said kids don't need to be vaccinated because their risk is so small. Then they said kids must be vaccinated because their risk is so great. They told people to isolate at home, even though that's how most COVID cases are spread. Closed parks, beaches, and outdoor venues, even though COVID rarely, if ever, is transmitted outside. They arrested people for being outside unmasked, even though they were among the safest population. They falsely claimed that early vaccine studies showed that those with natural immunity from prior infection benefit from vaccination. They covered up the estimate of the number of naturally immune for many months. They closed schools against the advice of many scientists, distorting education for a generation of students. They conspired to censor scientists, reporters, and others who report factually on COVID therapeutics and vaccine issues. They overcounted COVID cases and deaths by counting people with COVID but who were not sick from COVID. They shut down and destroyed the economy without improving the COVID situation. They caused the firing of people who cannot get or choose not to get vaccinated, even though they may have natural immunity or medical conditions that prevent them from taking vaccine risks. They blanket recommended vaccination for people who are at high risk of adverse events like heart inflammation and blood clots, and then falsely claimed vaccines prevent COVID infection, falsely claimed vaccines prevent COVID spread, falsely claimed vaccinated do not get sick with COVID, falsely claimed vaccinated do not get hospitalized or die of COVID. They claimed that the vaccinated who get ill with COVID would be sicker if not vaccinated, when there is no evidence that's the case with any individual. They failed to provide informed consent and warn of COVID-19 vaccine side effects prior to administration. They claimed vaccines are highly effective. They claimed vaccines work well against variants. They recommended up to 4 shots in 1 year because of vaccine ineffectiveness while claiming vaccines are highly effective. I'm sure YouTube's going to be going nuts over this, by the way. They also ignored the power of natural immunity and the hundreds of studies supporting it. They punished medical doctors who prescribe therapeutics. They punished scientists who researched therapeutics. They used the power and size of the federal government to bully and threaten companies into requiring vaccination despite their ineffectiveness in preventing COVID infection or spread. They failed to provide or to promote, rather, effective therapeutics, which can save lives. They withheld and prevented treatment and resources based on political calculations. They downplayed vaccine adverse events. They ignored pleas from vaccine injured to investigate and publicize their cases to prevent other injuries. They exaggerated serious risks from COVID-19, impacted military readiness by firing those who cannot or choose not to get the COVID-19 vaccine, even if naturally immune. They impacted healthcare system capacity by firing those who cannot or choose not to get the COVID-19 vaccine, even if naturally immune. They impacted the first responder industry by firing those who cannot or choose not to get the COVID-19 vaccine, even if naturally immune. Same with the education system. They even recommended vaccination for healthy children and others at near zero serious impact from COVID-19 illness. They failed to discuss potential roles of vitamins, sunshine, exercise, weight control, and a healthy diet. And they mislabeled COVID-19 a pandemic of the unvaccinated in a failed propaganda campaign. That's quite a list. And in this case, you know, Clarice Feldman says, I need to remind you because every day in every way, including all the advice columns their readers rely on, these failures are ignored and families are told things like it's a good idea to ban the unvaccinated from family gatherings and that the people who refuse them are selfish and putting their children's lives at risk. She says, I cannot recall this country ever falling under such fact-free mass hysteria. Now, there's more that she lists here. She talks about, you know, the George Floyd riots and Jeffrey Epstein and so forth, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. But the bottom line is stay on your toes this year. She says it's increasingly likely that the Democrats are going to be in deep doo-doo in the coming midterm elections. So it's also very likely that every trick in the book will be utilized to get through their blinkered policies and programs in any way possible before the deluge. And by the way, it's not just the Democrats. It's, you know, there are Republicans. There are Republican bureaucrats or Republican-appointed bureaucrats who likewise are very, very eager to escape accountability. So I'd like to see that accountability, not so much as a matter of vengeance, but just as a matter of, let's make it clear, you will not do this again. But most of all, that starts with you making sure that your worldview is in fact still connected to reality, and then boldly staking that claim for your life, your mind, and your destiny. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just want to give a shout out to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George, Utah. I actually talked to a good friend over the weekend. He's been through a lot of changes in his life lately and asked him, hey, how you doing? And among the things he was telling me is, look, hey, my life is settling down. I'm actually shopping for a home. And guess what? He had actually reached out to Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George and was working on getting himself all pre-qualified. So when the time comes to buy a home, he can jump right in. It's a good idea. Right now, the real estate market is still really hopping. Homes don't stay on the market for very long. You can't dawdle. When you find the home of your dreams, your financing has to be squared away right now. This is where the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage really shines. Heather has decades of experience. Her company has the stability and the clout to help you get the loan that you need without delay. Even if you're just looking to refinance an existing home loan, or whether you need a VA loan or a traditional loan or a reverse mortgage, these are the folks you want to talk to. Contact the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage by calling 435-703-4522. You can see them at 619 South Bluff Street in St. George. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. And Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. Well, if you're looking for a great resource for wrongthink, I have to recommend Mary Anna Alice's Substack site. I just discovered this in the last month or so, but I have been reading more and more of her articles, and I'm impressed. She has a really solid take on what's going on. Her latest on the Ministry of Truth's War on Misinformation, definitely worth your time. I like the subtitle, too. When 2 plus 2 equals 4 is verboten. And some people may think, well, that's an exaggeration. I don't think so. I don't think so. If you say something that comes a little too close to the truth, or at least a truth that undermines, you know, the agenda of those who seem determined to call the shots of what you can see or not, yeah, I think it's time to take a real close look about, you know, that freedom of expression, and why would someone want to limit that? Well, it's medical misinformation, Brian. We gotta protect you from that disinformation out there. Really? Because I can't do that for myself, can I? Well, you don't have to trust us. Sure I do. Okay. She actually starts with a quote from Milton Meyer. This is from the book, They Thought They Were Free, The Germans, 1933 to 1945. Free inquiry on a free platform is the only practice that distinguishes a free from a slave society. And that's a good quote. And Margaret Anna Alice says, when I was little, I had a poster of a raccoon with his paw over a kitten's mouth saying, if there's anything I can't stand, it's someone talking while I'm interrupting. In fact, she says, I was notorious for interrupting, asking questions, and getting so lost in thought, my mom had an ear doctor test my hearing because I was constantly saying, what? Now, that poster came to mind, she says, as I watched the Ministry of Truth campaign against misinformation first roll out. Today's version of that poster would say, if there's anything I can't stand, it's someone's information contradicting my misinformation. That's funny. As we all understand by now, when Mini-True, the Ministry of Truth, defines the truth as 2 plus 2 equals 5, then 2 plus 2 equals 4 becomes misinformation. And she says, if you're like me, you probably had more than a few brushes with memory holing and maybe even unpersoning as a result of Big Tech's mass censorship rollout. Not that they'd answer, but she says, I'm tempted to ask the censors, what is the danger if the sources are patently non-credible? Why treat us like infants incapable of assessing the validity of facts for ourselves? If the misinformation is so evidently false, let us see that on our own, and the question will be put to rest. Sunlight is the best disinfectant and so on, but yeah, that's precisely the problem, isn't it? Darkness must prevail for their narrative to survive the illuminating exposure of sunlight. Even if the gatekeepers have to blot out the sun, Bill Gates style. She says, a few months ago, I started experimenting with real-world attempts to deprogram new normalers on a private platform. I'd say it's about a 70 to 30 COVIDian to free thinker ratio. Not counting those remaining on the sidelines, quietly nodding in agreement, but too cautious to speak out. She says, what I've discovered, based on the failures and successes of others as well as myself, is that it's nearly impossible to gain traction on the science front. Their allegiance to the experts and the mainstream narrative is imbued with a religious fervor. And anyone who voices even the most hesitant of concerns is a heretical, tinfoil, hoax, plandemic conspiracy nut. Plus, any attempt to share compelling evidence from non-mainstream sources results in immediate deletion of the comment with veiled threats of silencing altogether. So the mere mention of Dr. Rainer Fulmich, for example, garners instantaneous eradication, or Dr. David Martin, or Dr. Mike Yeadon, or Dr. Robert Malone, or any one of the thousands of reputable Nobel Prize-winning and otherwise exceptionally credible scientists and medical experts sounding the alarm. Entering into dialogue about fraudulent PCR tests or the perils of the spike, the futility and health risks of mask wearing, the devastation caused by lockdowns, or anything else that requires you to share what they deem misinformation is a losing battle from the start. So she says, subsequently, I jettisoned that approach and focused on the threat of totalitarianism. I introduced historical primary sources, such as the interviews with 10 Nazis conducted shortly after World War II, found in Milton Meyer's enthralling They Thought They Were Free, the Germans, 1933-45. Now, of course, any comparison to the Third Reich immediately draws outcries of false equivalencies, so that approach can backfire too, but she says, the extensive evidence of parallels I provided generated no further pushback. She says, I repeatedly reminded the pitchfork wielders of the humanity of their dissident neighbors, cited escalating repressions around the world, elucidated the psychological mechanisms by which they are being manipulated, and advised them not to credulously assume that we are immune to tyranny. She says, I directly accused anyone who remained silent during the vilification, persecution, exclusion, incarceration, and worse of their unvaccinated neighbors of being no different from ordinary Germans who did not speak out about the treatment of the Jews. Now, this upset many of them, of course, but neither could they deny the nearly verbatim propaganda about the unvaccinated being spreaders of disease when I cited historical examples. She says, I gained a meager amount of traction with one virulent spike pusher, I'll call him Ampleforth. We engaged in several exchanges about stampeding authoritarianism, and he agreed it's a concern, but fears the virus is a more imminent threat and thus worth risking totalitarianism over. And she says, I called out his naivete and presented more evidence of the correlation between our present climate and the rise of tyranny throughout history, which appeared to give him pause for a half second anyway. Now note, she says, I always kept the conversation cordial and respectful, even while I was eviscerating their arguments. Elevating the dialogue to substantive debate and calling out ad hominem attacks, threats, and false accusations prevented the conversation from devolving into a shouting match. And she says, my forays into these debates started with a post in which Ampleforth reminded everyone of the site's misinformation policy given the uptick of cases in the area, to which she responded, thank you for outlining the misinformation policy. It is exhausting having to apply our critical thinking skills to multiple sources of information in our efforts to distinguish propaganda from facts. How much easier is it to outsource our thinking to politicians, megacorporations, and allied media? Obviously, they have our best interests at heart and would never misinform us. They certainly have never done so in the past. For further details on how to enforce such a policy, see the Ministry of Truth reference manual titled 1984. There's also a video tutorial available for quick reference, followed up by, perhaps Biden should follow in Emmanuel Macron's steps and start penalizing anyone without a sanitary pass with a $53,000 fine and a year in jail, where they're sure to be deloused. I hear Room 101 is available, as are several facilities in neighboring Germanic companies. CNN thinks so. Now, she says, I'll spare you the additional back and forth I had with the author, which we actually managed to keep surprisingly civil, even achieving consensus on topics like the Patriot Act, government surveillance, and corporate data gathering. He proposed that I start a separate topic about this, but I reminded him that posts like that tend to vanish in a matter of hours. Now, she goes into a lot more detail here. Her articles are quite lengthy, but they're very, very worthwhile. So if you want to check it out, it's margaranaalice.substack.com. I do have a link to this article in the show notes, which you can find at thebrianhydeshow.com. That's a pretty simple one to remember. And I'm not telling you, you have to believe everything she writes. I'm just telling you, of all the voices out there that you could consider, she's got a pretty solid take from what I can see. Thanks again for being part of our growing audience of wrong thinkers.
This is The Brian Hyde Show.